Are you a chronic people pleaser? Do you find yourself saying yes to stuff when really you just want to say no? Maybe you're struggling to use your voice and get it heard over the noise, or you're afraid to ask for that pay rise or promotion at work. In this one, we're talking about how to be ballsy when you've got boobs and not balls and you're 5 feet something and under. It's called From Feeling Small to Standing Tall. Welcome to the boardroom. So, Carolyn, the midlife mistress, it can be so flipping hard to stand tall when you're 5 foot 4 and a half like me. And you've worked in male-dominated industries. I mean, I remember really early in my career, I used to do sales and go around factories. And of course, it was all guys. And in those days, gosh, how many? There were all the calendars, the naked women on calendars, and they all have big boobs out. And of course, I've got little boobs as well, So sometimes it can feel so intimidating, can't it? When you were, and you're the same, you've worked in, like me, manufacturing, engineering, construction industries, and it can be so hard, can't it, to get your voice heard? Especially, I know as you went through your career, being abroad on the board, the only one.
They're the only
How did we
people.
just navigate all this stuff?
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it, when you look back? Because I think the things that I tolerated then, I would absolutely not tolerate now. But I can't 100% say that I wouldn't, if that makes sense. I think that often, my modus operandi sometimes was to just get stuck in and like be one of the guys. And that in itself, was a difficult place to navigate in itself, because there was that fine line between what was acceptable and what was unacceptable. But I used to find myself laughing along.
Yeah, well, like it's like that filling in sort of laughter, isn't it? To fit in. And I think, for lots of us, and this is why I think sometimes we can feel it really hard to be unapologetically ourselves at work and outside of work as well, because it's almost like we have to wear this mask at times in the workplace in order to fit in. Also, we might make ourselves feel a bit small or make ourselves small and not. And also, I noticed in the industries that I worked in, being afraid to kind of speak up, stand tall, speak up, speak out. And people would say to me, Joe, find your voice. And I was like, I've got a flipping voice. I just can't get it heard over all the noise around me, the louder voices in the room as well. And so I'd kind of shrink back and not put my ideas forward, because I'd be afraid, well, what will people think of me? All the sorts of things that whenever I did speak up, I mean, I remember a guy saying to me, oh, here she comes, the bolshie mank. Anybody listening and watching, I'm from Manchester in the UK. We do have a bit of an attitude. We can do. But finding that balance between feeling able to have the courage and confidence to speak up and speak out, but then when you do, you're criticized for it.
I used to refer to it as the testosterone treacle. Because it is a bit like wading through that kind of the testosterone filled environments. And for me, I think it was quite interesting in that I think I struggled with my voice more outside of work than inside of work. A lot that went on in my personal life, again, I was just letting stuff happen to me. And I'm not saying, I mean, there was a lot of that at work, and certainly early on in my career, but a bit like you, I think at work, sometimes I did turn up with a bit of an attitude. There were times when I know I was a bit combative, because I would get really frustrated. And I think that was the thing for me, is that I'd get really frustrated at work with the situations I'd find myself in, not being heard. And for me, working in HR in particular, I think there's lots of, we really want to do right by the people. Let's listen to HR. HR's in the room. Ooh, we better watch what we're saying. Don't say that in front of HR, which used to really drive me nuts. But also as well, I think that lots of businesses say that stuff, and then when push comes to shove, they don't really give a toss in terms of their people. So that trying to influence and trying to be heard around going like, you know, these people are miserable, or you're not treating them right, or you're making them feel that way, and just not feeling like anybody really gave a crap, actually quite a lot of the time. And I think the frustration used to build. And then I think sometimes it would never erupt in a, I don't mean in like a shouty way, but I think sometimes I would then be pretty forthright in like what I thought and how I felt, because I'd just been holding it in and hoping it would get better and trying to influence and do all of that softer stuff. And then sometimes I'd be like just like a sledgehammer, because I would just be like, oh my God, I just can't be doing with this. I just need to say it. Yeah.
And then I don't know about you. I mean, that used to happen to me as well, because you kind of like take a lot. But then in maybe what I'd find would be really inappropriate moments, boom, the emotions would come out. Either in it sounded, I don't know, whiny or aggressive, or actually, sometimes I just used to think I was criticised, or women often are criticised, if we're in an animated discussion with our voices, you know, we're over emotional. Yet the guys at times are kind of, you know, oh, well, they're assertive and they're just passionate about, you know, what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
I mean, different disciplines, but I do remember also, I know like HR, you get called the people police and the fun police and all of those sorts of things. And often you're everybody's friend, but nobody's friend, aren't you? You have to take a lot and carry a lot of secrets. In my disciplines were, I started in sales, but then moved into marketing, and certain industry sectors don't always fully appreciate, you know, the role of marketing and what it contributes. And so I'd get all this stuff like, oh, Joe, can you just sprinkle a bit of Disney dust on this? And it was like, yeah, but it's a turd and I'm not, you know, but they've dumbed me down, you know, they've dumbed me down. And I was thinking, hang on, I actually can do, you know, the strategic stuff and help, you know, really get results. And that was the other thing I think about not using my voice. The whole, if you want to progress in your career, a lot of the time you've got to do your own PR, and that can feel incredibly icky. And I had a boss, she was amazing, actually. She was super intelligent, full of integrity, could hold her own, but actually in a calm way. You know, I really admired that as well, because often I just spilled into this, you know, oh my gosh, and then sometimes an emotional reaction in inappropriate moments, and then beat myself up over it. But I remember having an appraisal. I hate appraisals, by the way. I think they're a waste of time.
Me too. As an HR.
Yeah, you're HR, aren't you?
Nothing worse than appraisals. If I could scrap appraisals and ban them, absolutely I would.
Exactly. We should just be having good conversations with people every day, shouldn't we? But I remember this appraisal, and everything was like really A-rated in there. And the one thing in my development was, Joe, you need to do your own PR internally. And I was like, what? First of all, I was like, what does that mean? Because for me, I just thought my results would speak for themselves. I've got results.
You're
telling me I've got results. But what I realised was, oh, right, okay, people don't perceive me. They don't see me in that way. And I don't shout about myself, because that just feels like you're a big show-off and you're conceited and a big person. But it's so important. How do you do that?
Yeah, and I think it's that thing as well that I do honestly think that it's a difference in terms of how like boys are raised versus girls. Mm-hmm. You know, just generally, and I'm not saying, you know, guys suffer with their confidence and you know, they can struggle to promote themselves, absolutely. But I do think that we're raised differently. Like, we're, you know, I remember at school, like the worst insult that you could get, usually from other girls, the worst insult you could get is like, oh, she really loves herself.
Yes.
And like, heavens above that you might have any self-worth and self-confidence, or like you say, self-promotes in any way. And it's like, oh, she really loves herself. So you would go out of your way to demonstrate to those girls and the rest of the world that you didn't love yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you would actively kind of try to do that. And I think that that's, for me, that's a bit of where the foundation lies, is that we then sort of are, like I said, almost going out of our way to demonstrate that, oh, well, I'm not that great, really. I don't think I'm that great. And so when we get into the workplace, I think we do really struggle with the idea of telling people about what it is that we've done. And we wait to be recognized. We wait for somebody to notice. And the bottom line is that everybody's the center of their own universe, aren't they? So everybody's busy looking at what they're doing and worrying about, you know, their success or how they're perceived. Mm-hmm. That if you sit and wait for somebody else to come along and go, oh, let me notice what you've been doing, then you could be waiting a really long time. And the moment of brilliance that you've had, you know, sort of passes. And then you just think, well, nobody noticed. You know, and then you just move on, don't you? And think, well, they'll notice next time.
Absolutely. And all of that stuff, actually, we're not really taught how to do, exactly because of the reasons. I mean, you make such a good point about it's stuff we hear, we see, mm-hmm. we're told. When in our formative years, and experiences that we have, probably with the most influential authorities in our life in those moments. So whether that's could be parents, teachers, your mates at school, you know, these people have an impact. And then we can choose to believe that. And that becomes a default in our way of thinking, our behavior. And then suddenly, you know, in my 30s, when my boss said to me, Joe, do your own PR, that felt so icky. But yeah. Yet when I looked around me and I took a step back, who were the people actually who got a pay rise, who got promoted, who accelerated their careers? It was the people who did shout about themselves and their achievements and accomplishments and weren't afraid to do that.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, one of the experiences I had was I worked in a really, really difficult environment at one point in my career, quite early on in my career. So I was in my late 20s, and it was a really tough environment. And I stayed there for 2 years, and every day was a fight. And again, I was the only female in the leadership team. They were all like a lot older than me. And, you know, it was, I just felt beaten up all the time with the things that would come through the door from all sides. And there was one guy in particular, he was the operations director of the site, and he would come and give me a really hard time over stuff I was doing. And then the day, like the last evening that I was there before I left, or I think it was the night before my last day, he made a point of coming into my office, and he sat there for an hour and told me how amazing I'd been and what a difference I'd made and how I'd made him think, and, you know, all the great stuff I'd done and how I was leaving the business in a better place than I'd found it. And all of this stuff came pouring out. And I was completely stunned, because none of that was a reflection of how he'd behaved towards me in the 2 years I'd been there. And the fact that nothing that I did seemed to get recognized was part of the reason I was leaving. And a big part of the reason, not because I wanted people to be there, you know, blowing smoke up my ass and telling me I'm amazing all the time, but the fact that I just constantly felt beaten up and felt like they were reinforcing the, you know, you're not doing it right and you're not good enough. And I remember, and I had quite a long commute to that job, and I cried in my car all the way home. Because I thought, if you'd only come on a couple of occasions in the last couple of years and told me what you've just told me, I wouldn't be leaving. And not only that, I was leaving, I was relocating to a different part of the country. I mean, it was massive upheaval I was going to get to my next job. And I'm not saying I would have stayed with that business for a lot longer, but I think I certainly would have stayed for a while longer than I did. And it's just, it's that. And you just think, wow. you know, if you'd actually just come and said just a little bit of that stuff to me along the journey, this now wouldn't be happening. I wouldn't be leaving.
Yeah. And I've had similar experiences too. You just reminded me actually of a boss I had once, a female boss, a woman. Again, incredibly intelligent. I learned heaps from her, but also some quite bad behaviours too that made me feel very small. Now, this was very early in my career as well, so I had a lot of admiration. I looked up to her, respected her, but some of her behaviours were quite bullying. And, you know, it really annoys me, this thing about, you know, as women, often we're trying to, this almost like, you know, on the one hand, we say, you know, we need to stick up, you know, empower one another and stick up for each other. And on the other hand, we can be our own worst enemies. And I remember, you know, like her feedback with things would be red pen over documents, comments that would be made to her PA at the time, who told me about this stuff, I think, without realising. And what I didn't realise at the time, because I was really young in my career, that I was probably being bullied.
Right.
But I didn't know that's what it was. And so I felt useless, not good enough. And of course, that played into other stories and things that were experiences that I've had when I was younger too, this whole I'm not good enough. And then, of course, you know, one of the most influential people in my life early in my career was a woman who was hypercritical all the time of performance. Just like your experience, though, I mean, I used to spend so much time, you know, I was crying, I couldn't sleep, I thought I wasn't good enough, didn't realise it was bullying. Today, I wouldn't stand for that, it is bullying. But I left too. And I found out subsequently that she was so upset that I was leaving. It was the end of an era. And I think her boyfriend at the time called her several times that day to check that she was okay, because she'd been telling him that she was really upset. But I just couldn't comprehend that at all. So isn't it interesting how we have these experiences?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's that thing. And I think I've really had to learn about standing tall. And I think for me, it hasn't just been in my professional life, absolutely in my personal life. And, you know, for me, I think for me, the problem was, is I didn't really know who I was. And a bit like you, you know, you're influenced. I think, you know, a lot of us have this I'm not good enough narrative that goes on in our heads. I was wearing a mask quite a lot, but I think now on reflection, I was probably wearing a mask outside of work and inside of work. And then inside of all of that, you know, there were two different masks. I think my workplace one versus my personal one, but there were still masks going on. And I think that I really struggled because of that not good enough narrative in my head to really stand up and go, you know, unapologetically, this is who I am. And I think that same frustration that I talked about earlier, I think used to burst out in my personal life as well, because I used to think like, this is who I am. I just wanted to be seen. And it's really interesting. I saw a quote yesterday, actually, that said, sometimes you think you want to hide when in actual fact, all you really want is to be found. And I think that was absolutely, you know, like, you know, who I was and what was happening. And I think the thing I had to do first and foremost is work out who I was. And only then was I able to then stand tall on what I would call my little square of the world, you know, the Carolyn Hobday square, and then go like, this is who I am, and do that. And I think that I underestimated that lack of identity and that shifting identity. I think during my life, you know, we change, don't we, over time. And I think that shifting identity in my life, those different identities I had in work and outside of work and all of that stuff meant that I just completely lost sight of who I was. Mm. And only by getting back to who am I and getting comfortable with that person and being really honest with myself about who I, you know, who I was and who I wanted to be, that was the only way then that I could then tackle really essentially then what I see as a confidence issue. And actually look at, okay, what does it take to be confident? And only by knowing who I was could I then go, I can have confidence in this person because I now know who she is.
Yeah, because right at the beginning, you were talking about, it's interesting really, isn't it, around confidence. And actually, this confidence paradox that we can have as well. So you were saying initially that in work, actually, you were pretty confident, weren't you? Super confident. I was the, but in your personal life, that looked very different. I was probably the opposite. I was more confident maybe at times in my personal life than I was professionally, although, you know, I suppressed or put a mask on at work, which meant because I didn't feel good enough. And again, that's about, you know, self-esteem and self-confidence, really. Maybe I didn't feel good enough because I didn't know who I was. That meant I overworked. It meant that I was a people pleaser constantly. I would say yes to everything in fear of, you know, what people would think of me, whether I would get a black mark against my name if I said no, and therefore that wouldn't do my career any good. And that was absolutely exhausting when kind of this, you know, almost like this inside, I was a bit of a wreck with it. On the outside, people kind of assumed or thought I had a really good job and somehow now managed to get to a very senior position in spite of all of this, but it came at a cost. People would have thought, oh, you're confident, you've got it all, but it came at a cost. And that cost for me was burnout. And if you have ever suffered burnout, it gets overused as a term, but true burnout is the emotion side of things that for me meant that I flogged myself almost to an early grave. And it's very difficult to recover from. To recover from it actually meant doing the stuff that you said, really, which is your inner work. Who am I? And I'm okay being me, but who is me? And like today on this, you know, we've shown up just by way of example. I like bright colours, red. I've got my red lipstick at work. I wouldn't, you know, early on in my career, I kind of hid away in the corporate navy and black suits and maybe don't put too much makeup on. But that wasn't me, because for me, I always feel more confident when I'm wearing my best colours, when I've got my red lipstick on. But here's the thing why I didn't do that, two reasons. When I was younger, I got told, ooh, women that wear red are vulgar.
Yeah.
And then I remember doing a presentation to the board once on a big, like, strategic project. And to boost my confidence, I wore red. And I got criticised afterwards, why did you wear red? You know, you should wear something muted because that red's aggressive. But to me, red was like my power colour. So isn't this interesting? So to wrap up on this episode, I know we've got some stuff that we can help people with. We're really passionate about helping others, women, sort their personal life out actually first, because we believe, I believe anyway, you bring your whole self to your job. So if things are going rubbish in your personal life, and you've got, I know, loads of stories that we'll share throughout the series. Might have two, but yours are pretty good, actually. Yeah. I say pretty good. Juicy stories. I'm so sorry these things have happened to you. But, you know, when we do that work that you're talking about, who actually am I?
Mm.
And we bring that to work, to relationships. We then start to stand tall. We then start to be unapologetically ourselves. And just for the listeners, there is a free guide accompanying this episode. Have a look in the show notes. There are some tips, something called Broads. We like our acronyms, don't we?
We
setting
do.
Boundaries, reaching out and building your circle, overcoming your inner chit chat, being aware, don't dim your light, and be utterly selfish, which sounds really icky, but that's the kind of work you do, isn't it? How you redefine what selfish means in a not icky way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I talk about it so much, like whatever analogy that you want to use, whether it's like putting on your own oxygen mask before helping others, which is the advice we get on a plane, putting on your own life jacket before helping somebody else, so that because if you're drowning, then you're absolutely no use to anybody. Whatever the analogy is that you want to use, absolutely. Being selfish is not a bad thing. It actually makes you better at helping others, and I think particularly as women, we are still the caregivers and the nurturers. That's sort of naturally, who most of us are. And I think for me particularly, you find that HR attracts that kind of person. It tends to attract empaths and people that want to do good for other people. But absolutely, if you're at the thin end of your own wedge because you've not looked after yourself, then actually you are useless to anybody else. And I saw something just recently where I think there was a survey that said that they'd surveyed HR people in particular, and said that like 95% of them felt that they were stressed out and at the point of burnout. I am sure, obviously I see that stuff because I see a lot of HR stuff because that's the kind of stuff I follow, because of my professional life. I am certain that's not just an HR thing. But I do think for women in particular, we just give and give and give. And we don't spend enough time going, actually, what do I need to turn up as the best version of myself?
So I can do those things, and I think also embracing both your femininity and your masculinity can really help, because I think being yourself at work, if you've not got, like I always struggle to find role models, senior women who I related to, because I think you use this phrase, can sometimes behave like be like pseudo men, can't they? In terms of the way they behave or the way they dress or the way they talk or whatever. And maybe that is them. Maybe that is them. But most of the time, I think it isn't. And I find it really interesting about, I always kind of thought femininity was pink, fluffy, soft. And for some people, that it is. But it's also about the things we get criticized for that make us really decent human beings. The things associated with it, like compassion and empathy, that's for yourself as well as other people. Being nurturing, all of these amazing qualities. And that's not to say either that men don't have that too.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that we have to remember is that it's not necessarily about being a woman. It's just about female traits, feminine traits versus masculine traits. And it's not just about then, only women have feminine traits and only men have masculine traits. You can have both, and you can nurture both. But evidence shows, scientific evidence shows that those feminine traits, like you say, like empathy, collaboration, nurturing, listening, that are female traits, because they do tend to exist more in women than they do in men, but not exclusively by any means, make you a better leader. They make you a better colleague, and they make you a better leader. And other people prefer to be led by somebody with those kind of traits. It doesn't matter whether they prefer to be led by a man or a woman, but they just prefer to be led by somebody who has more feminine traits than they do have masculine traits.
Yeah, and also, but I mean also the masculine side, masculine traits too, they're often associated with power, strength, courage, leadership.
Charisma. Oh, we love that one, don't we? Oh, we love to say a good leader has charisma. And it is, it's a really tricky one, charisma, because I think it can really cut both ways.
But also, I think, I've got some of those masculine traits. I'm powerful and strong. The shit that sometimes I've experienced, and I've, dug deep and built resilience and got knocked down and got back up again. These therefore may be associated as masculine qualities, but I have them both. So, embrace whatever feminine and masculine means to you, I would say, so that you can just be unapologetically yourself and be okay with that.
And I think as well that it puts an awful lot of pressure on guys. Because let's face it, you know, we're here for the boardroom, you know, we are women, and therefore, you know, we're talking about what it's like to be a woman in the world, you know, personally, professionally, because that's what we relate to, and that's who we are, isn't it, Joe? But, you know, I do think that if there are any guys that are listening, or I think that as women, you know, we also have to, you know, see the world, you know, and try and empathize with the guys as well. I think that some of those masculine traits, you know, that guys are expected to have puts a huge amount of pressure on them too, you know, to be seen to be strong and powerful and unemotional and assertive and all of those things. You know, that's a lot of pressure. If that isn't also who you are as a guy, naturally, then, you know, I do think there's probably an awful lot of men that are wearing those masks as well and playing up to that role, that masculine role that they think that they should
It
fulfill.
should be. And also, so just to end on this one, I struggled a lot actually with the title for this episode, which was How to Be Ballsy Masculine Trait When You've Got Boobs and Not Balls, right? And my conclusion was, having kind of come up with the title and the guide that we have, we've got a guide around that as well, as I've mentioned. Am I reinforcing stereotypes, language, and behavior with that? And I had to really question myself on it. But here's the conclusion, and maybe for a bit of fun, we might end with this, is I hear that balls are pretty sensitive, especially if they get kicked.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong, and guys, you have, if you are listening, my full sympathy. I've seen guys be brought to tears because they've been kicked in the balls, and you have my full sympathy. It looks painful. And so, therefore, actually, quoting the late great Betty White, who says, you don't want to grow balls because they're sensitive. You want to grow a vagina because they're tough and they get a battering. But actually, I'm pretty okay with women having balls because they're sensitive, and there is nothing wrong with being that sensitive person that you are. Shall we end on that one?
Oh, I think so. I don't know how we would even top that, Joe. I am woman. I am me. I am enough.
You've been listening to the Broadroom podcast. If you're our kind of broad and you'd like to take a seat in the boardroom, download our free guide full of tips. You'll find it in the show notes.